Hi, and welcome to Guideposts. I'm your volunteer reader, Sandy Summers. Today, we will continue reading the August-September 2024 issue of Guideposts with Mysterious Ways. Mysterious Ways, More Than Coincidence. 9 years ago, I was at the end of my 40-year marriage and the beginning of my recovery journey. I started attending AA meetings at a recovery center where I live in Virginia Beach. A group of us would go out for coffee afterward, and that's how I got to know Sam P. After 24 years of service in the Navy as a meteorologist, he had just retired. He too was going through a divorce after a long marriage. I was moved by the honest way Sam shared in meetings. It was clear he was passionate about helping others in their sobriety. We became good friends but didn't start dating for 2 years. We had both been hurt in our marriages and didn't want to ever go through that pain again. He and I took things slow. We went to church together and put God first in our relationship, yet we both still felt very guarded and unsure. I asked God to show me if Sam and I were meant to be together. A year and a half into my relationship with Sam, my youngest daughter asked me to move to Texas to be closer to her and my granddaughters. "You've got to do what you think is right for you," Sam told me. "Don't let me hold you back." I was surprised and more than a little hurt by his response. Although I still wasn't sure about the move, I listed my condo and headed to Texas. Sam and I missed each other so much that we were on the phone every night. He admitted that he hadn't wanted me to leave, but felt very strongly that I should do what God wanted me to do. Only 2 months after my move, Sam flew down to Texas and proposed. Although he'd been working as a contract meteorologist at the naval station in Norfolk, Virginia, he left that job and made plans to join me in Texas. We held the wedding ceremony in Virginia Beach, the place where we'd met, so we could invite all our friends from the recovery center to celebrate with us. A few days later, Sam took me to visit the Navy base where he used to work. As we were driving by the shipyard across the river, we came to an intersection with adjoining street signs that made us gasp. One sign read Williams Avenue, my former last name, and the other street was Pencock, Sam's last name. Clearly, we were meant to be together. Amanda Pencock, Willis, Texas. Have your own Mysterious Ways story? Send it to mw@guideposts.org. On Boundary Peak, I was a seasoned hiker. I had searched and rescue a training. I was well prepared to attempt the 13,140-foot summit, but most of all, I was stubborn. "As hard-headed as a mule," my mom would say, by Pamela Barreth, Lead, South Dakota. I clung to a boulder and forced myself not to panic. Panic would mean doom. Below a sheer mountain slope fell hundreds of rocky feet. One wrong move and I was on the side of 13,140-foot Boundary Peak, Nevada's tallest mountain. I had set out alone that morning on an all-day summit hike. Somehow I'd lost the trail and found myself on the steep slope of loose, landslide-prone ski. The slope was too unstable to descend without sliding. It looked too steep to climb. I glanced down. Big mistake. The bottom of the slope was far away. A stand of trees below looked like toys. I'm an experienced outdoors woman, trained in search and rescue and comfortable in Nevada's high desert. I'd looked forward to a day of beauty and quiet time with my Creator. How had I lost the trail? What was I trying to prove? Why hadn't I turned back hours ago? I knew why. As my family had always told me growing up, I'm stubborn. A guy on my volunteer search and rescue team was a bit of a chauvinist. He liked to tease me about being a woman in the wilderness. Part of my determination to climb this mountain was to show that guy I could accomplish this challenging climb by myself. I should have known the difference between being tough and accepting my limits. This slope was formed of scree, loose, crumbly rock that can easily give way and start a landslide. I had managed to ascend several hundred feet before the slope steepened and the talus started slipping away beneath my feet. Every step I took caused me to slide backwards. Dislodged rocks rolled and bounced down the mountainside ominously. I had made it to a stable boulder and now clung for dear life. I looked up. If I could get to a ridge above, I might find solid ground and a different route back down to safety. There were a few clumps of boulders between where I was and the ridge top. Maybe I could scramble from one boulder to the next. I steeled myself and launched up the slope. Ground slid beneath me, but I managed to outrun the rockfall and made it to the first clump of boulders. I rested for a moment and then launched up again, driving my legs like pistons into the rock. I reached another clump of boulders, paused, and scrambled the final feet to the ridge top. No, the ridge top was nothing but a narrow ledge of rock. The other side looked just as steep as the one I'd come up. My only choice was to climb higher along the ridge top and hope that some new option presented itself. I trudged along the ridge, my spirit nearly broken. Voices swirled in my thoughts, sharp, critical voices from my childhood in a small South Dakota town. Pam is as stubborn as a mule. She makes bad decisions. She'll pay a price for that. It's a fatal flaw. I had no reason to doubt that message. I always seemed to be overreaching and messing up somehow, and my family called out every mistake. Our church preached a no-nonsense, stern God. I figured that God had no patience for people like me. I yearned to break free and make my own way. I went to college and became a school teacher. I married at age 25 and had two kids. Despite those accomplishments, my family never stopped criticizing my actions or decisions. I did plenty of second-guessing myself. I went into my marriage with high hopes, but it was rocky from the start. My husband and I moved with our two kids to Nevada in search of mining work for him. The mining didn't pan out, and we divorced. My ex-husband moved back to South Dakota. I stayed with the kids in Nevada, determined to make it on my own. Despite my independent spirit, I sometimes wondered whether the judgmental voices were right. Maybe I had a fatal flaw. One bright spot emerged when I found a church in my small Nevada town. The church was like unlike any I'd known. People were non-judgmental. The pastor preached about God's love and said Jesus offers mercy and grace to everyone who seeks him. God, I learned, is not a fearsome taskmaster. He is a generous father. For God, no human flaw is fatal. I became a member of that church and made friends. Found a teaching job and joined the search and rescue group so I could gain confidence exploring nearby mountains. I waited until the kids were with their dad for the summer before attempting Boundary Peak. The peak loomed above my town at the northern tip of the White Mountains. Snow-topped in winter, it was dry and brown in summer. Making my way up the narrow ridge, I wondered whether I'd made as much spiritual progress as I thought. Maybe there really was something wrong with me that not even God could fix. My stubbornness had been steering me wrong this whole time. I'd vowed to do this hike just to prove I could. I forged ahead even after losing the trail. I told a friend where I was going, but I had failed to recognize when I should have turned around. I had food and water and overnight gear, but it would be dangerous to get truly lost. At this altitude, temperatures plunge at night, even in midsummer. I wasn't prepared to spend multiple nights on the mountain. I plodded on. My legs felt like mush. A childhood accident had left me with not so great balance at the best of times. I'm fine with hiking and moderate mountain climbing. This climb was testing my limits physically and mentally. I prayed nonstop that God would give me strength and show me the trail. So far, no route down from the mountain had presented itself. I began to wonder whether I would ever find my way back. I was jarred out of my thoughts by a sudden change ahead. I was close to the top of the mountain. From there, I stood. A knife edge of rock rose to the summit. On either side of that ledge, the mountain plunged thousands of dizzying feet. Stepping onto that narrow ridge would be certain death. This was the end of the road. What is wrong with me? I shouted to God. Why do I keep getting myself into these situations? Why did you make me so stubborn? My voice was absorbed into the silence of the mountain. I closed my eyes, utterly spent. You are not stubborn, a voice answered from somewhere deep inside me. You have determination. I made you that way for a reason. Is that you, God? I said into the windswept silence. I didn't have to ask. I really knew God was speaking, telling me that I was not stubborn but determined. Everything around looked brown and dry and forbidding, yet suddenly it was peaceful and beautiful too. My panic drained away. My thoughts ranged back over the story of my life. I could tell that story in two ways. One was a lifelong series of bad decisions, hurtful words, and judgments. The other, culminating in discovering a loving God who delights in me, was a gradual climb toward a personal relationship with Jesus, not without peril and setbacks, but with promised reward of grace. God had chosen this moment of maximum danger and fear to show me that the second story, the one about love and mercy, was the true story. Here atop Boundary Peak, I saw myself through God's eyes at last. I looked down the way I had come. Somehow, in the changed light of late afternoon, I noticed another ridge I must have missed while climbing up. If I could get down to that ridge, I could follow it to an easier slope that looked more secure. It seemed to head toward the place I'd lost the trail. For the first time since I'd lost my way, hope flickered in my heart. I began picking my way down toward the ridge, determined to find safety. A few hours later, navigating by the last light of sunset, I stumbled into the trailhead parking lot and collapsed against my car, both exhausted and exhilarated and more grateful than I'd ever felt before. Yes, I'd learned the hard way not to tempt fate by setting out on a dangerous hike in unfamiliar territory all by myself, but I had also learned I was God's beloved child, more determined and courageous in my life than I'd ever given myself credit for. I didn't need to prove myself to anyone. In the years since that hike, life ended up taking me back to South Dakota. I returned unafraid of the voices that once told me to be ashamed of who I was. Lost on Boundary Peak, I had found myself. I'm Sandy Summers, and you're listening to Guideposts on Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour reading and information service for people who can't read print due to a disability. If you missed any part of this program, you may access it anytime on demand at www.sunsounds.org. In addition to the bi-monthly Guideposts magazine, each week we may be reading some of Guideposts' other daily devotions or inspiring stories from Guideposts online. Animals and Healing, On the Wings of Eagles. Almost 30% of Iraq war veterans develop PTSD. Here's the story of one soldier's unexpected path to healing, by Telia Hahn, Indian Rocks Beach, Florida. It was cramped in the travel trailer where his family of six had been living since they lost their home, but the boy was young, 7 years old, and he didn't mind. All he had to do was step out the door, and he was in the great wide open world, the world of God the Creator, as his mother called it. Craggy mountains, rushing streams, sweet-smelling grass, blue sky that went on forever. One day came the most wondrous sight, a magnificent bird, dark wings outstretched, soaring high above. The white feathers on its head gleamed in the sun. The bird flew so freely as if anything was possible. "Look up in the sky," the boy said to his mother. "The eagle is a messenger," she told him. "Maybe it has a message for you, son." Sometime later, the boy and his mother were in a store that sold sage and feathers. Her native people used it in prayer ceremonies. Something caught the boy's eye, a bronze pendant of eagle's wings spread in flight. "Can I have it?" he asked his mother, transfixed. She smiled and bought it for him. At home, she performed a simple ceremony over it, asking for the Creator's blessing. "The eagle carries messages between heaven and earth," she told the boy. "Put your prayers upon an eagle and let it guide you." They say every deployment takes something out of you. I didn't know how true that was until it happened to me. I enlisted in the Army at 22 and served 6 years with various signal battalions during the Iraq War. I was stationed in Germany, then at Fort Lewis, Washington. I deployed to Iraq twice, to LSA Anacortes, the largest military base there. It came under mortar and rocket attack so often that it got the nickname Mortarville. Life in the small city in the sand was so different from what I was used to growing up in Montana. The dusty, desolate desert landscape, more than 20,000 people within the 15-square-mile compound, and the constant deafening noise, choppers, klaxons wailing, followed by the loudspeaker announcing incoming, incoming, incomings, mortars whistling before they hit, RPGs exploding. I didn't realize it then, but every day I was over there, I had to harden myself to survive, losing a little of who I was, the boy who loved eagles, the kid who listened when his mom taught him about Native American ways and God the Creator, touching the pendant he wore close to his heart, the teenager whom friends would come to for help when they had problems, the son whose mother died when he was 21, the young husband so eager to become a father. My marriage fell apart during my second deployment. I came home from Iraq and left the Army in 2008. I didn't know what to do with myself. I had no job, no wife, nothing meaningful in my life. I was suffering the symptoms of what would later be diagnosed by VA doctors as PTSD. I was constantly on guard. I got out of bed multiple times a night to check the locks. If I heard a car backfire, I'd hit the deck, as if I were back in Mortarville. Then I started dating a woman who saw something in me that I couldn't see. We had a baby boy we named Raiden. I loved our son more than I knew it was possible to love anyone. I took care of him while his mom worked. I witnessed his first steps, his first words. My symptoms escalated. Staying home with my son allowed me to withdraw. I pulled away from his mom. We moved from Washington to Montana to Florida for a fresh start, but there was no escaping my PTSD. My father died, another loss. By the time Raiden started school, I felt so broken that I couldn't get out of bed for days. Doctors at the VA hospital prescribed 18 different pills, but meds couldn't heal what my mother would have called a sickness of the spirit. It got to be too much for Raiden's mom. She moved out, taking our son. One morning, I paced my apartment. I should just end it all now. The thought scared me. I called my therapist at the VA. "I'm afraid of what I might do," I said. She kept me on the phone until sheriff's deputies got to my door. I was admitted to the VA hospital in Bay Pines, a suburb of St. Petersburg, for inpatient treatment for PTSD. After 8 weeks, I was discharged. I'd lost my apartment, so I moved into the homeless veteran shelter at Bay Pines. Medication, therapy, group sessions all helped. Still, something was missing, as if my spirit was muted. 5 years after returning from Iraq, I wasn't sure who I was anymore. One afternoon, I was walking down the shelter hallway when out of the corner of my eye, I saw something on the bulletin board, a flyer with the headline, "New Raptor Program." Raptors, like the eagles I'd been fascinated with as a boy? For the first time in years, I felt a flicker of interest. The flyer was for an outing to Boyd Hill, a nature preserve nearby. The day of the outing, the group of us veterans went to the aviaries at Boyd Hill. A man with a bushy mustache greeted us, a small owl perched on a glove on his arm. "I'm Patrick Bradley," he said. "Welcome. You are the first participants of the Avian Veterans Alliance Vet Raptor Walk." "I served in Vietnam," Patrick continued. "I was wounded in a mortar attack and brought the war home with me. I was full of anger. A psychiatrist arranged for me to work in the Canadian wilderness, counting the bald eagle population. I came out of the woods a changed man. Those eagles saved my life. That's why I started this program. I hope you can find the healing I found." I adjusted my sunglasses. I just wanted to get up close to a raptor. Patrick kept going. "These birds of prey have all been injured in some way," he said. "Your emotions affect the bird's emotions. For a bird to be calm, you have to be calm yourself first." Finally, Patrick handed each of us a thick leather glove. It reached all the way to my elbow. Then he took a bird out of its pen. "This is Rusty, a red-shouldered hawk. Would anyone like to hold him?" I stepped forward. Patrick set Rusty on my glove, attaching the hawk's tether to the metal ring on it. Rusty had a red belly, white speckled wings, an intelligent expression, a razor-sharp beak, and one eye. Patrick said the injury likely came from colliding with a window. "Ready?" he asked. "Go out in the park with Rusty and get lost in nature. Just enjoy the experience." Something in Patrick's manner took me back to my Army days. Affirmative, I replied, as if accepting a mission. I set out with the hawk on a wooded path. Rusty weighed just a pound or so, but I worried about keeping my arm steady, not wanting to jostle him. We headed down an incline. Rusty flapped his wings. I startled and Rusty flapped harder. For the bird to be calm, I have to be calm. I took a deep breath and exhaled slowly. It's okay, I said quietly. Everything's going to be okay. Rusty settled down and fixed his gaze on me. We walked deeper into the woods. The traumatic memories that had burdened me for so long seemed to fall away. Other memories surfaced. My mother teaching me that the Creator connects all living things, that when we are in harmony with God's creation, we can feel Him at work. Giving me the bronze pendant saying, "The ego carries messages between heaven and earth. Let it guide you." I still had that pendant tucked in a box at the shelter. I'd held on to it even after losing pretty much everything else. Maybe there was a message in that. "Tilia," Patrick exclaimed. "You've been gone for an hour and a half. I guess you took my advice to get lost in the woods, literally." "I could stay out here all day," I said. "Thank you." I started wearing the eagle pendant again, and I started working with the raptors at the preserve twice a week. I helped clean their habitats and prepare their food. Once I was feeding a hawk with an injured wing. He used to hide when I approached. Now he sat on my glove as I offered a bit of meat with forceps. "I'm here to help," I said. "Don't be afraid." Again, I held the meat out. He hesitated, then snatched it and gulped it down. With each bite, I felt his movements relax. By the end of the meal, he took the food without hesitation. We'd made a connection. Patrick became a mentor and a friend. I reached out to Raiden's mom, and she brought my son to visit me at the preserve. Day by day, life got better. In 2015, with the help from the VA, I got my own apartment. Patrick moved the Avian Veteran Alliance program to a different park, and I followed. One day, I arrived to find a new injured raptor, a huge bald eagle named Sarge. Every time I approached his enclosure, he would chatter and dance around as if happy to see me. Still, I knew I lacked the skills to handle a raptor of his size. "Do you think I'll ever be ready? I asked Patrick. He'd smile and say, "Just give it time." Patrick and I took raptors to the VFW. I watched the veterans' faces light up and remembered the joy I felt when I met Rusty. For the first time since the war, I dared to hope, to imagine possibilities for myself. With Patrick's encouragement, I applied to college. At the park, the day before my first class, Patrick called me over and handed me a glove. He took Sarge out of his enclosure and put him on my arm. Sarge was so majestic. I touched the pendant, knowing that my prayers had been carried to God on eagle's wings. Midway through my freshman year at St. Petersburg College, my English professor suggested I become a teacher. "I see the way you help other students," she said. "You have a gift for connecting with others." I graduated in 2019. As I crossed the stage to receive my diploma, I looked out into the crowd. I saw my friend Patrick clapping harder than anyone, and there was Raiden beaming at me. Afterward, he hugged me tight and said, "I'm proud of you, Dad." My heart soared like the eagles that God had sent to guide me ever since I was a boy. I'd learned who I was. Son, father, helper, teacher. Today I teach PE at Azalea Elementary School in Pinellas County. Our school mascot, the eagle. Generation to generation, a soul of his own. When her son left home, did the faith he grew up with go with him? By Lisa Bogart, San Rafael, California. I lean on my faith. I want that for my son Zach, too. When he was little, it was easy. I sent him to vacation Bible school every summer. I took him to youth group weekly. I even joined the handbell choir with him. But as he grew into adulthood and left home, I had less say over his life. I knew that not every child will follow the path their parents have set before them. Had I given Zach enough of a foundation to find his own faith? At age 30, he lives and works in Portland, Oregon, more than 600 miles away from his dad and me in San Rafael, California. Zach is not a churchgoer, although he happily joins us when he comes home for Christmas and Easter. He likes the jazz combo that plays on those Sundays. "This is the best way to do church," he tells me. More than anything, I worried that I hadn't shared with my son my deep love I feel when I sit in prayer and meditation. It is one of the most joyful parts of my faith, and I hoped I hadn't missed the boat when it came to offering it to Zach. Recently, I went to Portland for a visit. Zach has a one-bedroom apartment. I slept on the fold-out couch in his living room. That first night, I felt a little exposed and vulnerable when I rolled out my mat for meditation. There was no privacy, and he could see me praying and meditating. On the second night, he asked, "Can you show me your evening practice?" "Of course," I told him. "Sit down across from me." I begin by closing my eyes and taking a few deep breaths. Zach followed suit. "Now imagine a ball of warm golden light just above your head," I said. "It's the divine light of God. I let this light in, touches the top of my head and comes all the way into my body. I feel it come down my neck into my heart, filling my belly. It grounds me to my seat and goes all the way down both legs. I'm surrounded by the love of God. Here I sit in silence and rest." I'd learned this simple practice of quieting my mind and body at my church. Meditation is part of centering prayer, allowing us to concentrate not our thoughts, but on the divine. Zach and I sat face to face, eyes closed for a while. At last I said, "When you're comfortable, you can open your eyes." I snuck a peek at my son. He opened his eyes and said, "You need to show that to everyone." I smiled. I should have known it's never too late for a mom to share her faith with her child. "I just showed it to the most important person I can think of," I said. For more on this story, see Family Room. That's all the time we have today for Guideposts. Thank you for listening. My name is Sandy Summers. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.